Good morning. We're going to call the meeting to order.
We're going to acknowledge that Bobby Stedman is sitting in for Curtis today as he's in London and Amsterdam to meet with Delta and KLM. Happy Pi Day to everyone, including those people for whom that's an important day of the year, all you math folks out there. We'll call for a motion and second to grant a leave of absence to Commissioners Carter and Levy, who are out of town.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Now we'll call for a motion and second for approval of the minutes of the regular commission meeting of February 14th, 2018.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. We'll ask Bobby to provide the executive director's report and her remarks.
First, I want to start by acknowledging our safety champions that you, the folks that you see on the board here, and then also hand it over to Stan Waters, who's going to give us a brief safety update.
We'll see how brief. with all the construction that we're going to have going on here at the port over the next 7 to 8 years, I thought I would talk today about our construction and job site safety and what we're doing to keep our work areas safe for the public and for our employees. But first, I did want to recognize one of our large general contractors, J.E. Dunn. J.E. Dunn is our general contractor on the parking additions and consolidated rental car facility. And just recently, they've been recognized with two prestigious safety awards by the Associated General Contractors, which is the leading association for the construction industry. And it represents more than 26,000 firms nationwide and nearly 830 member companies in the Oregon Columbia chapter. So J.E. Dunn received the 2017 Oregon Columbia Chapter's Recognition of Safety Excellence Award, better well known as the Rose Award, which recognizes chapter leaders who demonstrate safety excellence. And then J.E. Dunn also was the national recipient of the 2018 AGC of America's Construction Safety Excellence Award for the Building Division. And the award recognizes construction companies with outstanding safety, health, and risk management programs that show evidence of management commitment to safety, active employee participation, safety training, worksite hazard identification and control, and safety program innovation. So I just really wanted to recognize them. These are quite prestigious awards that they received. And it is the characteristics like these that the port does look for when we're choosing contractors to deliver our projects, as we're committed to the safety of not only our employees, but the contractors, customers, and the community as we go about our work. Now for what we've been doing. Due to the vast amount of construction that we will have going on, approximately a year and a half ago, we added a new position, a construction safety administrator, whose primary focus is on contractor safety programs and performance. He works with project engineers and architects during the design phase of our projects to eliminate safety issues for end users, participates in the contractor selection process, and then works directly with our selected contractors to ensure protection of personnel, port property, and members of the public during construction. And then in addition to these activities, we've also started a safety learning forum where each of our large general contractors, Skanska, Hoffman, and J.E. Dunn, along with the port, share lessons learned from the various projects, discuss safety-related issues, and we coordinate on safety issues that could materialize due to the interrelationships between our multiple projects. Our hope is that by adding this increased focus on project safety, we will minimize and maybe even eliminate the inherent risks that are associated with such a large construction program. And then finally, I will end on a reminder that anyone who gets invited to visit a construction project should never enter a construction site without checking with the general contractor first. And then also for port projects, please check in with the port project manager or one of our construction inspectors for personal protective equipment and escort requirements on our job sites. With that, Bobby, that's the safety message today.
Thank you, Stan.
Yeah.
A few additional comments. At the airport here this week, we celebrated the opening of the PDX Quick Turnaround Project, where visitors' rental cars are made ready with fueling, washing, and on-site storage. The new facility helps us continue to provide outstanding customer service as we grow. And the new building, 220 rental car employees can work to clean and fuel 430 cars per hour. And the facility is designed to minimize its impact on our water resources. It captures more than 2 million gallons of harvested rainwater, allowing car washes to operate without any use of municipal water. And then this month, we also celebrate our 10-year anniversary of the PDX Amsterdam nonstop route. As mentioned previously, Curtis is meeting with Delta and KLM this week in Amsterdam. We appreciate our continuing partnership with our friends at Delta KLM and local companies who regularly use the route, continuing to make it a very successful route. And then last night we hosted one of, I guess, Curtis's favorite events, which is the PDX Make the Connection event, where we celebrate our partners and volunteers at the airport who provide outstanding customer service. On the marine side, after exporting more than 87,000 vehicles in 2017, we continue to lead the U.S. West Coast for auto exports. The combined number of imports and exports were more than 300,000 vehicles, an almost 8% increase from 2016. Then in our community, great news from TriMet. The Max Redline service to PDX has been expanded as of early March, adding hours on both ends of the schedule. TriMet is also working on a new 24-hour bus service, which may begin as early as the fall. And we really want to thank the airport employees and the community members who provided comments and feedback to TriMet, which really helped make these improvements happen. And then February, as many of you may know, was Black History Month. We all enjoyed hearing from many outside guests over the course of Black History Month, including Port Commissioner Michael Alexander. Thank you. As I understand, I missed your event, but I continue to hear about it. So thank you for that. We also had an amazing performance by the Jefferson Dancers. But the most powerful, or one of the most powerful speakers, or group of speakers, we're members of our own team. We want to thank our employees for sharing their personal perceptions or perspectives during a panel discussion of how race has impacted their lives and experiences. And we had four employees in that panel discussion, and that was Nicole Murphy Garcia, Rhonda Boyd, Kimberly Mitchell Phillips, and Michael Richards. So thank you to them. And then one final comment on equity. The port held the first of several equity training sessions on exploring bias and the concepts of inclusion, facilitated by Resolutions Northwest. We did that last Thursday. Written comments from the participants so far were very, very positive. And I'd like to thank our Commission President and Commissioner Gary Young, both who attended that session last Thursday. So thank you for that. And Madam President, that concludes my comments.
Thank you. We'll call for a motion and second for approval of the Executive Director's report.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. We're going to open the meeting for public comment. I think Mr. Moritz, you're signed up.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Stefan Moritz with Unite Here Local 8. Dear commissioners and port leadership, a few months ago, we had a very interesting and I thought productive discussion about the interplay of wages, benefits, rents, and pricing policy here at Portland Airport in terms of looking at concessions. And I think you heard loud and clear from various stakeholders, both labor and business, that there's an interest in finding the right balance that allows workers, businesses, and the traveling public to benefit from the tremendous public asset that is this airport here. There's new leadership at the port, at the commission. There's urgency from important stakeholders, and therefore there's an opportunity to make progress on breaking the cycle of, you know, what we think is unfortunately a cycle of poverty for workers at the airport. But for there to be advancement, there needs to be a dialogue with the leaders of this institution, and there needs to be a concrete and, I think, tangible plan with a realistic timeline leading to real solutions. I want to urge you, you know, what we do not want to see, as we say in our union, is sort of the death by stakeholder process, or that the issue gets buried in a study. And I recognize that stakeholder processes and studies can play or play an important role. But I think what's important for that to work is that there's a shared analysis and buy-in at the beginning about the contents of a study and the end goal of that process. So we urge you to move swiftly on making progress on these concessions issues, because there's no time to waste. There are workers who can't afford their rent and face homelessness. There are workers who can't afford their medical treatment and look at the possibility of going bankrupt. And there are workers who can't afford to send their kids to college. They can't wait for 3 months or 6 months or 9 months or a year. The time is now, and we urge you to move forward on finding solutions. Thank you.
Mr. Moritz, I just want to say we, I think, share a desire to move forward on this issue, and want to let you know we made a commitment to come back with a response and answers on this subject. I believe that later this spring we expect to have further information, and that we can then share and continue the dialogue. So I appreciate you coming to the commission mm-hmm. and asking us to continue.
Yeah, and we appreciate that too. And we just want to keep the dialogue going.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. We'll move on to our general discussion items. Bobby, I think you have.
I'll introduce Catherine Williams on behalf of Kristen Leonard, who is not here today. Catherine is one of our government relations team members. She's going to provide a brief recap on the 2018 legislative short session, which I believe concluded about a week and a half ago. I'd like to add, however, this is also Catherine's last briefing for us. Catherine has accepted a position at Northwest Natural Gas and will be leaving us shortly. She's going to take a position as the Director of Government Relations and Community Affairs for Northwest Natural Gas, and we will miss her greatly.
Thank you. I will miss you too. So I wanted to provide a brief update on the short legislative session. And before I go on any further, just to kind of ground people in why we use the term short session. Many of you know that the state of Oregon budgets on a biennium. So we set a 2-year budget, and that's in the odd year session. So in 2017, there was about a 5.5-month session working through budgets and forecasts and big, meaty policy issues. The short sessions are on the even years. That's what we just concluded. And they're constitutionally mandated to last 35 days. This session wrapped up a bit early. A 27-day short session wrapped up on Saturday afternoon, March 3rd. And that was a week earlier than the constitutionally mandated deadline. So that's pretty significant. It shows you both what the budget was telling us, which was there was not in the budget co-chairs of Ways and Means view a crisis, and also that some of the meatier policy issues were going to be postponed and discussed next session in 2019. So I mentioned that the revenue forecast showed that there was about $100 million additional funds coming in from the last forecast, and then also based on some decisions made during the short session to decouple or disconnect from some of the federal tax code changes that were just made, there was some additional money that did come to the state. And I'll talk a little bit later about how that was allocated. The other piece, just as an update, is the makeup of the legislature had not changed since I last came to you. The House and the Senate are still controlled by Democrats, but neither chamber has a supermajority. So that's significant when you're talking about tax votes. So the key policy areas for the port were PERS, and I'll talk a bit more about that, but a bill did pass related to PERS. That was an important one for us to monitor. The implementation of the transportation package, House Bill 2017, was passed last session. It was about a $5.3 billion investment in transportation infrastructure, and it's a big, complex policy and revenue bill in that it was investing in transit for the first time in a pretty meaningful way across the state. That bill will be implemented over multiple sessions, so there was some work done on that. There were a lot of bills related to energy and the environment, and there was a lot of conversation, but ultimately nothing passed related to contracts and procurement for public agencies such as the port. Some pretty robust conversations around QBS, or quality-based selection, which is a contracting program, and then some conversations about hiring with respect to minority women-owned businesses. Again, nothing passed in those two areas, but there were a lot of hearings in the first week and a half, and some work groups have been set up over the interim, and I think the port staff will allocate some time to be part of those conversations. So transportation, always a big issue area for the port. The Department of Transportation, after sort of looking at the bill that was passed, made a request for 179 new positions for the department. And those are really everything from finance folks to engineers to project managers. It takes a lot of people, as we know, to implement a $5.3 billion program. They were successful and were allocated about $117 million to fund most of the FTE that they asked for. And just in sitting through those hearings, it was interesting to sort of listen to the hiring managers talk about, where are we going to get this talent? Where are we going to find these people to implement this important work? We're going to have to go to neighboring states. I mean, it's going to be, I think, a workforce challenge for the department. Another piece of the transportation conversation, the Department of Aviation budget increased by just about $1 million, $950,000, to provide oversight and funding for the three unmanned aircraft system test ranges throughout the state. And then Real ID, as we continue as a state towards implementation of the federal Real ID Act, Oregon now has funding for the Department of Motor Vehicles to offer the type of driver's licenses that you will need come October of 2020. Anybody who wants to board a plane, if they don't have a passport, will need this quote unquote enhanced ID. So the DMV obviously is where you go to do that. And up until last session, they didn't really have the ability to implement that. So once that hurdle was removed, then they needed to sort of propose a plan for how they were going to make IT upgrades and other things to receive this additional documentation and then offer folks who want to choose that level of ID. So this conversation is ongoing. It's a big issue for us. As you know, we board many thousands of passengers every day with our partners at TSA, and we want to make sure the traveling public is well aware of this change and have enough time to prepare to go to DMV to get the documents they need to get that ID, so they're not surprised when they show up at the airport and 2020. And then the unchecked box, Connect Oregon, weren't able to get additional money out of this cycle for a competitive grant program associated with the Connect Oregon program, which is largely what we've had for the last 10 years. So we're going to continue to work on that issue with a lot of partners around the state. In the area of energy and environment, coming into session, there had been a lot of work done over the interim on proposing a cap and trade, some called it cap and invest program for the state of Oregon, mirroring what has happened in the state of California and two provinces in Canada, Ontario and Quebec. There was a big push, the biggest lobby day I've seen in my tenure, of folks coming down and talking. I think ultimately, the leadership felt that there just wasn't enough time to have the conversation throughout the 90-member legislature in such a short session. But they did choose to invest some money for folks to work in a newly created carbon policy office and allocated some funding to do some additional analysis on that proposal over the interim. Again, this will be a big issue in 2019, and the port will be at those tables. There were some proposals around diesel regulation. Neither bill ultimately made it all the way across the finish line, but we were involved in those conversations as well. And then interesting sort of companion bills associated with the duties and roles and responsibilities of the Oregon Department of Energy. Some folks were interested in adding climate to that portfolio, there was another bill that would actually have created a commission structure similar to the ports for the Department of Energy. So it would be proposed by the governor, confirmed by the Senate. Again, neither of those passed, but we were involved in the conversations and watching them. What did pass, and we were supportive, was the Cleaner Air Oregon essentially funding an implementation bill. And what that does is it funds a new DEQ program to monitor and limit pollution from industrial facilities. So we were pleased to see that that got over the finish line in the area of energy and environment. So now to PERS, just stepping back a little bit to the work that was done over the summer and into the fall. The governor appointed a, this is the acronym SUP here, PERS UAL Task Force. So UAL is the unfunded actuarial liability associated with PERS in the state of Oregon. I don't know the exact number. If Bob Burkett were here, he could shout it out. But I think it's about $50 to $52 billion right now, estimated, is that unfunded liability that the state's looking at. And coming out of the task force, there were a whole series of recommendations. And part of the bill that the governor proposed, which was Senate Bill 1566, which did pass, was really dealing with how to help employers. So employers in this context are school districts, counties, ports, how to help employers begin to manage their own piece of that $52 billion UAL. And one of the conversations that occurred over the interim and then during session was around site accounts. And you all probably recall from a briefing you received a couple weeks or months ago now from Bob Burkett on our finance team, the port has invested in two different site accounts to sort of take some money and put it with PERS to invest to manage a portion of our own liability. A important part of this bill was to create tools for other entities to do the same thing. So they created an employer incentive fund that will offer a state match. I think it's a 25% match that will encourage PERS employers to address their own liabilities. And then they took some of that one-time funding from the unhooking to the federal tax code to start to capitalize that fund. So there was about $100 million of money from that one-time federal business income tax that's been repatriated to the state, as well as current and any potential future state windfalls, right? So if there's a lawsuit settlement and money comes to the state, it will be directed into that EIF. And we worked very closely with the governor's office, with members of the Senate and the House that were working on this, and some of our partners that are also trying to wrestle with their own UAL. So looking ahead, I mentioned that the transportation package is just going to sort of continue to be implemented over time. Congestion pricing or tolling, or we're now calling it value pricing, is going to be a pretty hot topic. Part of the House Bill 2017 transportation bill that was passed directed Oregon Department of Transportation to put together a steering committee to recommend to their governing body, the Oregon Transportation Commission, about what kind of tolling could be implemented in the Portland metro area. Curtis Ravenhold sits on that on behalf of the port. They're about halfway through their work. They're going to essentially look at where I-5 and 205 meet in the south part of the metro area to the Columbia River on 205 and 5, where you might be able to implement tolling. So you've probably seen the newspaper articles. There's going to be more of that coming. People have very strong opinions about tolling one way or another. But from the port's perspective, moving people and freight is important, and we want to see how it both benefits and what some of the burdens might be. How are you impacting commuters? How are you impacting people who are traveling very far to get to their jobs, and what does that do to their economic situation? So we're looking through it all these different lenses, and it's for a transportation nerd like me, it's exciting work because it's now in the abstract. When it becomes real, I think it's going to be a little bit tense. Connect Oregon competitive grant program, again, talked about continuing to fight for discretionary dollars for that competitive Connect. Terminal 6, lots of good news to share with respect to the terminal this session when I met with legislators about the rail service and the container service. But I think more to come on T6 as we sort of figure out what that business model looks like. Carbon climate, we're going to participate in the cap and trade conversations over the interim. Any news we have on Portland Harbor, we've now sort of educated members of the legislature. They've become advocates about getting the river clean, so we want to talk to them about what we're doing with respect to that. And then just watching what happens with the November election. The governor's up for re-election. There'll be some changes at Bureau of Labor and Industries. The House and Senate filing day, I think, was last Tuesday. There'll be a lot of competitive races around the state, so it'll be interesting to watch from a political science perspective. So with that, I'll stop and see if you have any questions.
Any questions, comments? Hearing none, thank you
thank
for your
you.
Service to the port.
I would just point out that Bob is here, and I don't think it's a $50 billion liability, just to get that on the record.
Thank you.
About 25.
Oh, see, it's even better. It's better news.
Already.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Good luck to you.
Thank you.
I'll ask if any commissioner wants a presentation on the consent item, which is the Port of Portland Fire Department Civil Service Commission appointment, Portland International Airport.
No. Okay.
So I'll call for a motion and second for approval of the consent item.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. I'll call on Vince to introduce the first agenda item.
Good morning. The first item here is the collective bargaining agreement with our firefighters, and you'll notice we have a good contingent of our group here today, so we're actually honored to have them here. And I did want to just take a minute before we get into the contract. We're very fortunate to have these folks here. They take care of us, obviously, here at the airport, but they do a lot out in our community. And in the last year, it's been incredibly busy. They responded to the devastating wildfires down in Southern California, the oil derailment in Mosier, the Gorge Fire, and just this week, the fire here over on Killingsworth at the scrap metal yard. And it's part of our mutual aid program that we have with the City of Portland and many other agencies. And I just, if we could, just kind of acknowledge them for the great service that they provide to all of us here in the region. We're here today to talk about a new contract. We've been negotiating with them for the last year or so, and Blaze here has got the highlights of the contract that we've been able to come to resolution on.
Yes, after 16 bargaining sessions and 4 mediation sessions, the primary issue has been healthcare and where we would go on healthcare. As you all know, over the last 4 years or so, the port has continued to move in a direction on healthcare of 2 primary offerings, Cigna high deductible health plan and a Kaiser HMO. And the issue of that healthcare essentially became whether or not there was another option that they could go to other than staying on our existing plans, which was not an option for any of the groups that we rolled it out to. And they pitched a trust, a healthcare trust, that was different than the healthcare trust we had with 2 of our unions. At this point, I also want to report that nearly 90% of our employees are on the healthcare offerings of the port. Another 6% are on traditional Taft-Hartley Trust, and the firefighters round out the 5% that is now on this multi-employer healthcare trust that we agreed to. The wages for this 5-year agreement, they agreed to a 0 in that first year, and consideration for that was a $1,500 one-time lump sum payment that you will see on the schedule. The next two increases for 7117 and 7118 are based on the CPIW Portland Salem Index second half that all of our groups were on, and that index was just eliminated this past year. So we're in the process with our groups of negotiating a new index. So that's what those two numbers, the 2.2 and 3.6, are based on. One of the first groups to go to this index, the CPIW West Class A second half, is the fire group. DCTU went to this as well with the PDX maintenance contract last month. And the minimum ranges for 7119 and 7120 are 1% to 4%. So we expect those increases to fall in those ranges. Some of the highlights on healthcare, just go through them quickly because, as I say, it was the key piece. Here, we had to negotiate what would occur if the firefighters did not move off the existing healthcare come 7/1/18. So that had to be in place. We are in the process of transitioning. It's very complicated from our group, but into the multi-employer trust. The trust is the Northwest Firefighters Relief Association, which also has the Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue. TVFNR is one of the comparables that we look at, the eight comparables in the Portland area. And we generally have looked at the same group in the Portland metro area for the past 30 years or so. With this group, that TVFNR and two of the other comps also are on similar healthcare trusts. The trust will provide medical, dental, and vision coverage. The port makes a monthly contribution, and that'll be subject to an escalator adjustment with increases capped at 8%. So that was negotiated going forward. And there's a formula attached to it. We did a lot of research on this as well, of a weighted average, including both medical, dental, and vision trend data that comes from the major agencies like Siegel looking at these trends. The port monthly contribution of $100 per employee per month to a post-employment health retirement plan, that was around since 1992. That was eliminated. To the degree we could consolidate payments and minimize payments and administrative burden for the port, we did that and moved in that direction. And I want to acknowledge the firefighters for working closely with us on that. As consideration, again, one of the key pieces, Kelly Days. Kelly Days are unique to the fire service, but are sort of a long-established, what I want to say, a benefit, but not a paid benefit, of giving a firefighter a day off, frequently backfilled if that individual is on the line. So in this particular case, we looked again at that market of the eight other jurisdictions in the Portland metro area, and we are right at market where we should be, going from 8 to 10 Kelly Days per year. There you see what the work week actually works out to. They were at 52.45 hours a week average, and it would now be 51.54. That goes in effect January of 19. And puts us most closely aligned to Gresham, but that is the average here for the market. I'll note that employees for holidays, we changed what they are paid if they actually work Independence Day, Thanksgiving, and Christmas Day holidays. They were paid previously at 1.5 times their rate of pay. They would now be at 2 times their normal rate of pay. Why the double time is a fair question. We looked at the market, and we also looked at internal equity, and they don't receive holiday comp days. They don't have a bank like that, like some other agencies or groups have. So if you are not scheduled to work that day, it is like a regular day. So these are this increase would only be for the individuals who actually work those shifts on the line. Also, just briefly, we have a series of increases or changes. We actually have a couple new premiums that we did in response to that market. And I have that in considerable detail in the agenda item. I can answer questions about that too. The estimated financial impact in new dollars year one, I think probably artificially low, but low because of the zero wage increase there, and tends to go up as we get into year three, and it's fueled by changes, as I say, both the 3.6% increase based on the CPIW sort of in the middle of that contract, and the changes in premiums. So effectively what this means is new dollars 5 years into the contract, in the fifth year, the budget is $1.3 million higher than it currently is. The total increase over the life of the CBA being at $3.4 million there on this contract. The executive director recommendation is for approval to enter into a five-year collective bargaining agreement with the International Association of Firefighters Local 43.
As president of the Oregon AFL-CIO, I have an interest in any action that affects the International Association of Firefighters Local 43. They are an affiliate of the Oregon AFL-CIO. Therefore, I'm declaring a potential but not actual conflict of interest. I will participate in the discussion and the vote.
I have a question whether the members of the union have ratified this contract.
Yes, they have.
Thank you. Any other?
I have one quick question, maybe just two. The bonus.
Yes.
$1,500.
Yes.
What is the background to that? That's number one question. Number two, that $1,500, does that include the gross up, additional amount, or gross up should be on top of that?
No, that is grossed up. That includes the gross up, and it was done as consideration for the zero in the first year.
Oh,
for no increase to base.
That's all. Thank you.
Yes.
Any other questions or discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for a motion. Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, buddies.
Thank you.
Vince, I think you have the next agenda item for us as well.
Yes, I do. It's that time of the year for construction contracts, so we have a number of them today. The first one here is for the employee parking lot bus route rehab. This is pavement that was put down in 2001. It's been degrading and really has no more useful life, so we'll be putting down new pavement that hopefully will last us for about 40 years. And Chris Edwards is here to present this one.
Thank you, Vince, and good morning. Today I'm requesting approval to award a construction contract to Brown Contracting for the employee parking lot bus route rehabilitation, the amount of a little over $1.6 million. This shows the overall project work area, which is our employee parking lot, which where we have our PDX and port employees park. In essence, the work entails reconstructing the bus route in concrete, doing some mill and inlay of other locations and asphalt, and there's going to be some storm drainage improvements with it. This shows the overall project schedule. The item bulletin left is what's before you today. We anticipate this work being done by early fall of this year. The budget and funding, again, the contract before you today. Personal services, that was for our design contract on this. Port staff contracted services, that's for project management, inspection, testing, geotechnical, things of that nature. Contingency is 10%, which is prudent given the complexity of the project. And it is funded out of our port cost center. A small business component, we have about 11% on this one, which our contractor is meeting as well. Staff requests approval of the executive director's recommendation.
Any questions or comments on this item? Hearing none, I'll call for a motion and second to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Okay. The next one now is for a equipment procurement contract for airfield lighting on the north runway, and this is part of our overall airfield electrical lighting improvement program, and Chris is also going to present this one.
So the item before you, as Vince mentioned, is an equipment procurement for airfield lighting components. This is to Airsight Solutions for our North Runway circuit replacement, SMIGS upgrade, SMIGS and LED upgrade, and it's a little over $1.5 million. So this shows the overall work area, which as you can see is throughout the entire PDX airfield. It's pretty extensive, and what we'll be doing is changing out fixtures to LED. We're going to replace the north runway circuit, their stop bar lighting components. We need to procure this equipment ahead of time because it's a long lead item, so that's why we have to do it now. This just gives you a sense of some of those components that we have out on our airfield. You can see our edge lights, some stop bars, center line. Not the greatest picture, but at least gives you an idea. And here is the overall schedule. The item bolded on left is what's before you today. I will be back before you in about 2 months in May for the actual installation contract. And then ultimately this will be started this summer and complete early part of next year. And there's the Airsight Solutions contract before you today and the installation contract that is yet to be bid. Talked about contracted services. Right now, it's a contingency of 10%, but again, we still need to finalize the budget once we do the actual installation contract, and it is funded out of our airline cost center. Staff requests approval of the executive director's recommendation.
Thank you. Any questions or comments?
Yeah, just, and I understand the nature of all these projects are very different and specialized in some ways, but the absence of a small business set aside, is there any explanation for that?
The small business, because it is a specialized nature, they don't have, there's not a small business that can procure this particular equipment.
I understand. Are there ancillary sort of activities or subcontractors or other things? I mean, I understand the nature of this business, but somebody is going to move something from point A to point B, or somebody is going to remove waste, or I'm just trying to understand if there are missed opportunities in the filter on this.
We did look for those opportunities. We even reached out to Airsight Solutions to see if they work with any small businesses. And again, there wasn't that particular opportunity.
So this is just the equipment.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So when there's actually the installation, I would expect there would be more opportunities there for the installation, perhaps.
Technically
no?
Not.
No? Okay.
Again, when we deal with our airfield lighting, it's really specialized equipment, and fortunately there isn't small businesses that can do that type of equipment and installation.
Well, I understand. I appreciate it, and I hope you'll continue to think about it, because I'm going to continue to ask about it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Other comments or questions?
Did I read that this would wrap up all the LED lighting for the taxiways and runways, or was there still more that'll need to be done after this?
This should wrap up most of our airfield lighting for all the LED.
Okay, thanks.
All right, I'll call for motion and second to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Thank you.
Okay, now we're going to replace bag claim 9 and 10 conveyors here at PDX. These are significantly older assets as part of our asset maintenance program, and Alan will make the request for this.
Good morning, everybody. The agenda item I'm presenting to you today, hopefully, is this advancing? Sorry. There we go. The agenda item requests your approval for a construction contract, a public improvement construction contract, to John Bean Technologies for roughly $1.1 million to replace two conveyors at bag claim 9 and 10 at the airport. These are some photos of the area. Bag claims 9 and 10 are on the north end of the concourse. They serve United Airlines and American Airlines. They were installed in the mid-1990s, so they're 20 to 25 years old, well beyond their useful life now and fully depreciated, needing to be replaced. So the project schedule's been designed so that we can be complete with the work before the Thanksgiving holiday rush in mid-November of this year. The project budget includes $1.1 million for the construction contract, a design fee, port staff costs, a contingency fund of roughly 10% of the estimated cost. Total project budget is $1.7 million. It will be funded by the Airline Cost Center. We do have a relatively low small business participation goal of 2%. That's because the predominant factor in this project are the conveyors themselves, the manufacturer of the conveyors. So there really aren't any small businesses engaged in that aspect of the work. We were able to get 3% participation, actually, so 50% more than the goal of 2% in the mall wall, which is the temporary barricade that protects the public from the project work area. The executive director recommends and staff supports a recommendation of the approval to award the contract to John Bean Technologies for $1.1 million, roughly.
Thank you. I'm one of those who have been using these carousel 10 and the what have you.
Yeah.
I have not noticed anything was wrong with it, but anyway, as old as you say it is,
right.
Maybe time for replacement. My question is, what very notable improvements would you see once the new system gets installed? What are the changes over what we have today?
No, really, there's a safety improvement. We're going to realign, reposition the conveyor to improve safety for our workers, so that will be an improvement. The speed of the conveyors will be the same. The capacity will be the same. The reliability will be better, though, because now when there's a breakdown, there's an extensive teardown, and our maintenance crews are really on the ragged edge of being able to repair these pieces of equipment.
So most passengers will not see that difference.
No, it's the reliability. They're just at the end of the useful life, and the parts are old and they're hard to find, so it's just a better technology. But it's basically the same thing.
I understand.
Yeah.
Gotta ask.
Will the core reconstruction affect this area?
Yeah, we're looking at that, Commissioner. There is a very good potential that there will be some rearrangement in the T-Core project, but that is 5 years down the road from my understanding of that project schedule.
Yeah, by the time we get into that, if we get into that area, it's at least 5 years away. So we just felt the need to go ahead and proceed now.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for a motion and second to approve.
So move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Vince, you've got the last item.
Okay, last one. We're going to move to the marine side now and do a rehabilitation of berth 503. This is leased to Portland Bulk Terminals, which is used by Campotex for the export of potash. We're obligated through our lease to do the maintenance on this berth through the year 2036, and then Portland Bulk Terminals will take over after that. Their lease goes until 2063, but until then, it's our obligation. So Eric Forsyth is here to talk about the work we're going to do at the berth.
Thank you, Vince. Morning, everyone.
Morning.
Today I'm requesting approval to award a public improvement contract to Ballard Marine Construction for the rehabilitation of berth 503 at Terminal 5 in the amount of approximately $668,000. As you see in the map, Terminal 5 is located on the Willamette River. Berth 503 extends out, allowing Campotex and Portland Bulk Terminals to offload potash and soda ash to ships heading over to Asia primarily. The public improvement contract aims to rehabilitate the piles that support the berth. Scope of work is as shown. It's a series of durability and structural upgrades to the piles supporting the berth. I've included a photo of an example of this type of work, primarily jacketing to make sure the steel piles and concrete piles survive and a long and stressed existence on the Willamette River in this environment. Schedule is as shown. We began design in April of 2017. We aim to be substantially complete with this project by November of this year. Budget is summarized as shown. The contingency, I'll note, is high, but due to the risk profile of this project, and the requirements to coordinate with our tenant, we believe it's justifiable. Also, due to the unique and specialized nature of this work, everything's off of a barge and in the water using divers. The Small Business Enterprise Program didn't set a minimum goal for any of the work involved with the contract. Staff requests award of this contract, approval of the executive director's recommendation.
I have a question. The variability of the bids is so big. I'm just concerned about, you know, how do you feel about that? Even the engineer's estimate is four times what this bid is, and, you know, the highest bid is three times. Is that the price?
That did concern us too. We went through a long analysis process, not only internally but externally with our contractor. We came to the conclusion that in the engineer's estimate, one of our proposed estimated unit prices was high for this material, whereas the contractor's price is based specifically off of vendor's bid, so their numbers are a lot better. Plus, in this type of work, it's all about access and being able to get to the area that you need to do the work consistently in the way that the contract documents require. So because it's barged work, everything is based off of the water in terms of ingress and egress. Prices are going to vary quite a bit depending on what type of equipment the contractor has, how they're getting labor and equipment and materials to the location, and that's very hard to estimate. After a fruitful conversation with the contractor, they've understand the scope of the work. We believe they know what lies ahead of them, and we believe that they also know what's in the contract documents moving forward. So I think your concern is justified. Believe us, we were concerned as well, but we believe that the contractor is responsive and responsible to our bidding process, and we recommend moving forward with the construction contract.
I echo her concern as well. Numbers
you.
Are not even close.
Right.
Yeah.
Has the port had previous work experience with this contractor?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
Have you looked at the materials they plan to use for this project? Is there some qualifying?
We went through a detailed substitution request process during bidding. What they have proposed will meet the intent and requirements of the design.
Perfect. So to the extent that there are overages, in other words, it costs them more to perform this project, is that their risk or is it the port's risk?
Well, it depends, you know, depending on the issue. We believe the contract documents are detailed enough to do the work in accordance with the engineer's design. However, we elected to increase the amount of contingency and port soft cost by a little bit through a budget realignment. And that's reflected in the budget slide. So therefore, you'll see a contingency a little bit higher than normal and soft costs that are a little bit higher than normal. However, we believe it's best to move forward with the contract.
Appreciate that you guys did the work that sort of meets or responds to our concerns. I think we all looked at that slide and had the same thought.
I did too. Yeah.
Any other questions or comments?
Well, it's not necessarily related to this particular topic, but I would like to note that this is the third proposal we've reviewed where there's been an explanation for the lack of the small business goal not being met. And so perhaps that's an opportunity that we should seek to influence systemically, gathering this data over time and seeing if there's a trend in these discrete niche areas. And perhaps we could do more to influence talent investment there.
Great. Thank you for that. Any other comment or question? Hearing none, I'll ask for a motion and second to approve the executive director's recommendation.
So move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. We're adjourned the meeting.